Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths.
What you drinking today?
Damn it, okay. I have a feeling you're gonna do that. I was like, no, it wasn't fast enough. I am drinking the holy cannoli flavor from Bones Coffee. And I say it like that because that's just, it's fun to say it like that. It's not to make fun of anybody. But anyway, I'm drinking it black. And I actually kind of like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't expecting to like it this much.
Can I sniff it black?
Yeah, you can sniff it black. Because it actually, it smells like cannolis to me.
Mm.
And it tastes pretty smooth.
I have very rarely gotten to partake in cannolis, so I think I've had you.
I've been to a few places that sell good cannolis, but I haven't consumed a whole lot of cannolis in my life, if that makes sense. Like, I remember that there's chocolate, I remember that there's, like, a cream inside it, but, like, as far as I have never been to Italy and had a, like, cannoli, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, from what I understand, because one of my best friends from, well, I mean, she's still my best friend, but I met in high school, they're bakers, and the good ones are made with ricotta cheese, not what other people use, like the Americanized version. I think some people use like sweeter cheese.
Mascarpone.
Yeah. So the place isn't there anymore, but I remember her going with me to get cannoli specifically at this Italian bakery at the mall because they made it the right way and they were on sale.
Damn. I want to try some.
Like I said, they're closed, so.
Yeah. A lot of places are closing here. I don't know about around the world, but
anywho's it. So this week is Celtic Week. Yay! Once again. Happy April, everyone.
Happy spring.
Yes, finally.
I know spring kind of came in last weekend. Well, we're recording this the weekend after spring started, but we're really starting to see it here.
Yes. Yeah. All the trees outside have started to flower.
It almost felt like it was overnight.
Yeah, we walked outside. We were like, was that tree always pink?
Yeah, I was like, look. It's pink! And she's like, what?
Because I came home from work, yesterday, and I don't remember seeing it. And, like, you have to look at it when you're parking, so I don't know how we both missed it, unless it did happen overnight.
It's like we're both coming back while it's still daylight hours. It's not like it's not gonna show, but I don't know. Who's it?
Super excited that it's finally spring.
Yes. Get it to do a lot more stuff. But there's a lot more people out now. I don't know about everywhere else of the people that are listening to this, but the restrictions here in Maryland have loosened up in significant amount. Not to the point where we don't wear masks, but the amount of population allowed in places like restaurants and certain places has gone back to normal here. Despite the fact that a lot of us are not vaccinated yet.
Right.
So we're on the air of caution. We're like, we're still going to be ordering curbside pickup from these restaurants if we want it.
Yes. I do not feel comfortable
going into a restaurant yet, no. Right. Like, you were just talking about that one is it an Irish pub that we go to? And, like, we've been there and ate inside pre-panorama, pandemic, pizza party. But we were just talking about it yesterday, and we're like, we don't feel comfortable eating inside there yet.
No. And it's not them. It's just anywhere.
It's like, anywhere in general.
Yeah. I will be watching something that was filmed years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can tell. They're wearing, like, 90s clothes or early 2000s clothes, makeup, like, light blue eyeshadow and nude lipstick. And I will still be like, why aren't they wearing masks? They are too close to each other. This is like a long-term mental thing that I'm going to have to deal with. But anyway.
So what are you talking about today?
So previously we had already discussed the Tylwyth Teg. Now we are going to be talking about another type of being in Welsh folklore. The Ellyll, spelled E-L-L-Y-L-L, and plural Ellyllon, spelled E-L-L-Y-L-L-O-N, are this week's topics. Modern Ellyll are called elves, but traditionally, they were more akin to elemental spirits. I've seen them described as embodiments of the natural world, which brings to mind the Greek nymphs in what they embody, but they're much smaller. Like, the Greek nymphs are humanoid size.
Right.
But these are smaller. They can be found in valleys and groves. Like many fairies and elves, they can bestow gifts and be nice, but they can also cause mischief and steal babies.
As do all.
Yeah.
I say it like everyone does it. Like...
The Echyech are described as pygmy, elf-like creatures. They can have pointed ears, fangs, or wings. I've seen sizing from fitting in the palm of your hand to about 1 foot tall. And I've seen art that ranges from those elemental spirits to monstrous ghouls to Tinkerbell-esque fairies.
I like the latter.
Mm. You can find them dancing under oak trees on Fridays, in particular.
I was about to be like, is that in particular? Because I want to know.
In particular.
Fridays, got it.
That's where the club is hot, under the oak trees on Fridays.
I mean,
And it said that people that find their trip home taking longer than expected will search their surroundings for the Echyech. In matters of dress, they are shown wearing foxglove flowers as gloves. And it said that they eat toadstools and fairy butter.
Fairy butter?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sounds good. I mean, it sounds good in thought, but I want to know what it's made of. Why are you laughing like that? Did you find a recipe?
I actually did. I did find information on them. So.
Okay, good.
Toadstools are a fungus called Amanita muscaria, and they are poisonous. That's your classical red with white dots mushroom.
Which a lot of artists use for like, okay, this is what a mushroom looks like.
Right, or like Toad from Mario.
Yeah.
Fairy butter is also a fungus, and it's called Tremella, that is found under the roots of rotting trees and in limestone crevices. That face, though.
Oh my god, this sounds so gross.
Okay, so it sounds gross because I'm being like fungus, but it's actually really cool looking.
Okay.
So it's
that's kind of cute. Okay, we're fine. We're okay.
Yeah.
We're good.
For the listeners, it kind of looks like a ruffled yellow, but there's also like a white version. But it just looked like almost if you had ruffled lace and you ruffled it like back and forth on top of each other. That's what that makes me think of.
That's pretty cute.
Or like the land version of that one type of coral.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Tremella. And I was on a couple different websites and they were like, it's safe to eat. And then another website would be like, it's poisonous. So just to be safe, don't eat it. Because we don't know for sure. Unless you're like a mushroom expert. Then go ahead and eat your mushrooms if you like.
Like that one chick from...
Little Witch Academia?
Little Witch Academia.
Susie.
Yeah, Susie. Yeah.
I love Susie. She's funny.
Yeah.
So another name for the fairy butter is witch's butter.
What?
Yeah. So... Some websites were saying that the leader of the Echyech is Queen Mab, but says she's more of a leader than like a royal queen, unlike the king of the other world that we discussed during the Telotek episode.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an actual folklore story that I found on the Echyon, and it was on the website sacredtext.com. In the Huntsman's Rest Inn at Peterstone Superlee, near Cardiff, sat a group of humble folk one afternoon. When I chanced to stop there to rest myself by the chimney side, after a long walk through green lanes, the men were drinking their tankards of ale and smoking their long clay pipes. They were talking about their dogs and horses, the crops, the hard times, and the prospect of bettering themselves by emigration to America. On this latter theme, I was able to make myself interesting, and acquaintance was thereupon easily established on a friendly footing. I led the conversation into the dominion of folklore, and this book is richer in illustration on many a page in consequence. Among others, this tale was told. On a certain farm in Glamorganshire lived Rowley Pugh, who was known far and wide for his evil luck. Nothing prospered that he turned his hand to. His crops proved poor, though his neighbors might be good. His roof leaked in spite of all of his mending. His walls remained damp when everyone else's walls were dry. And above all, his wife was so feeble she could do no work.
That made him evil?
No, no. He's not evil. He has evil luck, like bad luck.
Okay, I was like really confused for a second. I was like, that's just sad.
Yeah.
You got rotten luck, bro.
Yeah, just bad luck. His fortunes at last seemed so hard that he resolved to sell out and clear out, no matter at what loss, and try to better himself in another country. Not by going to America, for there was no America in those days. Well, and if there was, the poor Welshman didn't know it. So as Raleigh was sitting on his wall one day, hard by his cottage, musing over his sad lot, he was accosted by a little man who asked him what was the matter. And not, like, accosted, like, attacked. He was just bothered. Like, hey, what's the matter? Raleigh looked around in surprise, but before he could answer, the Echius said to him with a grin, "There, there, hold your tongue. I know more about you than you ever dreamed of knowing. You're in trouble, and you're going away. But you may stay, now I've spoken to you. Only bid your good wife leave the candle burning when she goes to bed, and say no more about it." With this, the Echich kicked up his heels and disappeared. Of course, the farmer did as he was bid, and from that day he prospered. Every night, Catty Jones, his wife, and there's a side note here, until recently Welsh women retained their maiden names even after marriage.
Oh, what? That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So every night, Catty Jones, his wife, set the candle out, swept the hearth, and went to bed. And every night, the fairies would come and do her baking and brewing, her washing and mending, sometimes even furnishing their own tools and material. The farmer was now always clean of linen and whole of garb. He had good bread and good beer. He felt like a new man and worked like one. Everything prospered with him now as nothing had before. His crops were good. His barns were tidy, his cattle were sleek, his pigs the fattest in the parish. So things went on for 3 years. One night, Catty Jones took it into her head that she must have a peep at the fair family who did her work for her, and curiosity, conquering prudence, she arose while Raleigh lay snoring and peeped through a crack in the door. There they were, a jolly company of Echion, working away like mad, and laughing and dancing as madly as they worked. Catty was so amused that in spite of herself, she fell to laughing too, and at the sound of her voice, the Echion scattered like mist before the wind, leaving the room empty. They never came back anymore, but the farmer was now prosperous, and his bad luck never returned to plague him.
That's kind of cool. That was like a really positive story. About them.
Right. Because
that's like the best thing that could possibly happen with that kind of...
We have definitely heard worse stories.
Yeah. It's like they looked at him and was like, you have the worst fucking luck. Let me help you out.
It's very kind of them.
Yeah. But did he pay him back in any kind of way?
No. All he had to do was leave that light on for him.
Hmm.
So it's so close to... The Taller's Neighbor story, yes. From Norse mythology that I read, except...
And they actually had a relationship with them.
Right. They weren't, like, hidden away. So I thought that was a nice little story. And then their classification, as you were talking about a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
They're considered a solitary fairy. And what I ended up doing for my art was... more of the small fairy elf type with wings and pointed ears on a toadstool than just like a smaller human.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the digital art is taking so much longer than the watercolors. It's taking it's because so you're going long. To
like, you're doing all the textures and the glowing effects and like you're learning a new medium.
Yeah.
You gotta give yourself a break.
I know.
Because once you learn it, it gets faster. Remember when we first started trying to like trace the stuff on a PNG on the tablet?
Yeah.
And the first time you were doing it, it like took fucking forever.
Yeah.
You gotta give yourself a fucking break.
I know. And I know it's just more practice time, but it's so long.
I remember you talking about watercolors in this fashion. how when you started with watercolor, you didn't feel very confident about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been doing it so much now, your shit looks so good.
And, you know, it's funny because I ordered special watercolor paint. It's like a pearlescent bluish that goes to black. And it finally came in. And we're not really doing watercolors anymore, so maybe one of these weeks I'll jump back to watercolors so that I can use it.
There's nothing saying you can't do that.
I know.
We could always draw something, even using with those like really cool pencils you were using, mm-hmm. and use the watercolors on that. Like, there's nothing saying that we have to do it via Procreate. I've been doing things via Procreate because I want to get better at doing Procreate. And it's a lot easier for me to pick colors on things. And then be like, hey, can you help me out with, like, these certain small details? But that's it. Like, I don't need you to be, like, doing all the watercoloring for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway. It's a good topic. I like the topic you had for that.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it.
Ekje? So the...
Ekje?
Yeah.
I said it really bad. I know I just fucked it up. Ekje?
Ekje. So the double L is, like, an H. Ekje.
Ekje.
There you go.
Ekje.
Yeah.
See, I'm like trying to do like some kind of thing with the back of my head.
Yeah.
Ekje.
And even I'm probably not saying it 100% true, but that's what I was
finding
that's how you're supposed to say it.
Did you watch anything from Mara
mm-hmm.
on TikTok?
Mara's where I got the how to say it.
Okay.
Because I would not have known otherwise. I would have been going, the Elyil?
That is canon something we would do. And cue to us from the very beginning being like, we're sorry for our pronunciation.
Right. So that's the Ekje, and we will be right back after a quick break. And we're back.
Okay, so this week, Leah originally made the topic out for what I was doing, and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing with that until I started looking into it and I realized that is not the main topic of what I'm talking about today.
That's fine. It got you there.
It got me to my topic, yes. So Leah wanted me to cover Ostara, and I didn't know anything about Ostara before I started other than it has to do with springtime, like the spring equinox.
Yep.
Which this year it was March 20th. So I am not just talking about Ostara, but I'm also talking about the Celtic hare.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bunnies!
Bunnies. The bun. Ooh, I like the bun. Anybody that ever watched VeggieTales knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, so it's West Germanic. And that's what's, like, threw me off about Ostara. Okay, so I look into Ostara, right? And the first thing it tells me is that it's a West Germanic spring goddess. Nothing to do with the Celts. When I go on Wiki, it says, Yostr was the West Germanic spring goddess, namesake of Easter in some languages, which was attested by a guy named Bede in the 8th century with his work called The Reckoning of Time, where he states that during Jostermonath, which is April, the pagan Anglo-Saxons held feasts in Jostr's honor, but the tradition died out by the time he was writing it down.
Okay.
All right. It was replaced by the Christian Paschal, which is the, when I looked into that, that's basically the more common wording for Easter in a lot of other languages, which deals with the word for Passover from the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's the month celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. So I went to some other websites because I was like, I need more information. So I found Ostara has to do with the spring equinox festival, celebrating the time when day and night are of equal length. It was believed to be related to the northern goddess Eostar, or Ostara, which inspired the Christian festival of Easter. There's evidence found in cairn temples at the Noth and Lucru that the equinox was of great importance to the Neolithic, or Stone Age, Irish. In Noth, it was one of the largest Neolithic cairn temples with a 100-foot passage that let the sunlight fully light up its chambers on the mornings of the autumn and spring equinox. Eggs were used in the Ostara festival as symbols of the rebirth and beginning of new life, and the hare or rabbit was the symbol of the goddess Eostre, or Ostara, for fertility. Both symbols were adopted by Christianity and are still used to this day. And then it also discussed hot cross buns and how they were the show for equal arms of balance within the cycle of the two equinoxes crossed by the two solstices, also known for like the four seasons or the four directions, but they were also adopted by the Christian celebration of Easter. So, I put a big star next to this note, because Leah asked me, he's like, okay, is Ostara in relation to Ishtar? Because there's actually some information out there on the web of a picture with saying that Ishtar and Ostara are of the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to go look into it, and all the articles are like, nah. Anyway, so with further research, I found that Eostre, it was not mentioned until written by the English churchman named Bede, as I've said previously. And it was debated by scholars whether what he was writing was true or not. So we're not even sure if this whole, like, Ostara festival was even real.
Okay.
Because it just wasn't written down. Ostara was not named in writing until 1835 in a book titled Deutsch Mythology by Jacob Grimm, proposing Ostara to be a Germanic goddess that was widespread worshipped, and in 1874, in a book also titled Deutsch Mythology by Adolf Holtzmann, there was a speculation about the Easter hare, popular in German tradition, being associated with the goddess. For example, there's a story of Ostara finding a wounded bird in late winter and changing the bird into a hare, but the hare was not fully transformed, and therefore we have a hare producing eggs, like a bird, giving the Easter rabbit an eggs correlation.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the Ostara and hare story was created in the 19th century, as opposed to being so old like other people try to claim. So let's turn our sights to the Celtic mythology surrounding the hare or rabbit, because that's what got me into that.
Bana,
literally going on a bunny trail. Okay.
Ba-dum-bum.
Okay, so the Celtic tale of the Book of Taliesin from the Mabinogion tells a story of a servant boy named Gwion who stirs a magical potion in a cauldron for an enchantress named Caradwen.
I really want to get that book.
That book? Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds important because I kept finding it, but that's a good idea. Yes. Mm-hmm. Only the first three drops of this potion would give a person beauty and wisdom, but the rest would be poisonous.
Oh, shit.
Yes. So the three drops were being made and were supposed to be preserved for Caradwen's son. The potion ended up spilt on Gwion's hand, and he accidentally consumes the drops by licking them off of his hand to clean it.
No.
Yeah, so soon he realizes the potion is taking effect, and he realizes how angry this will make Caradwen, so he turns himself into a swift hare to flee. Caradwen, in turn, transforms into a greyhound to give chase. From there, Gwion transforms into a fish, and Caradwen follows suit by transforming into an otter. Then, Gwion becomes a bird, and she becomes a hawk. I keep thinking of Disney's King Arthur when Arthur keeps transforming.
Yes.
That's just all I keep thinking about as I'm, like, reading this whole chase thing. So finally, Gwion transforms himself into a grain of wheat. And Caradwen eats it and becomes pregnant.
Oh, damn.
How this makes sense, I don't know. So when she gives birth, she gives birth to Gwion, reborn as a beautiful child, and she floats him out to sea. And there he is found and raised by a prince. And reborn Gwion becomes the great and wise Taliesin. The hare is here linked to the story of Caradwen, who is often shown as a Celtic goddess of creation and inspiration. It was also believed that hares were associated with witches, and witches could shapeshift into hares. For example, the Celtic tale of Oisin, which tells of a warrior that hunted a wounded hare, specifically wounded in the leg. Upon chasing the hare into the ground, Oisin discovered a beautiful young woman in an underground hall, also wounded in the same spot as the hare, and it is assumed that the hare and the woman were one and the same.
What you get for assuming.
Right. It was believed a witch hare could only be killed with a silver bullet, or a silver cross. Like, it sounds very werewolfish to me. In a circle gathering...
They're not supposed to know.
A circle gathering of hares called a hare parliament, there's actually a name for it, was thought to be a gathering of witches. So my idea for the art was to do, like, a circle of hares wearing black cloaks. There is a famous Celtic hare motif of three hares. a design of three hares chasing one another, entwined by their ears. It has also been found in many other ancient sites, ranging from the Middle East and Far East to Britain and Europe. The earliest finding was in the Buddhist cave temples of China from 581 to 618 CE. In England, the three-hare symbol can be seen in churches as a sort of symbol of the Holy Trinity, but it is also suggested it actually is a motif of the Celtic triple goddess, with ideas of the lunar cycle's fertility in the natural world.
That is so neat. I have never seen that
diagram before. I had not seen it until, like, I was looking into this. I was like, that is some cool stuff. It was actually, I saw it on a coin. And yeah. I was like, what?
And I'm, like, looking at it, because I looked it up, because the way you said entwined, I was imagining, like, them twisted this way with, like, their ears knotted together.
Yeah, no, that's not what it looks like. Yeah. So, cool thing. See, Julius Caesar recorded rabbits were a taboo food to consume in Celtic tribes. In Ireland, I found a saying that eating a hare was like eating one's grandmother.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So,
well, I mean, that's good if it's possibly a witch.
You don't want to fuck with that. So, also found that it was believed rabbits burrowed underground to better commune with the other world, or spirit world, and they could convey messages from living to the dead and humankind to the fae. It was also noted in another source I read that animals associated with women from the other world could shapeshift into the form of a hare, thus the whole witches thing. Upon further diving, I saw a mention of a Celtic lore specifically tied to white hares. This is tied to the belief that if a woman dies brokenhearted, she then will reappear as a white hare and haunt her deceiver until the deceiver ultimately dies. And I have a thing to read about that. Give me one second. Once upon a time, there was a young man who was hired to manage a vast farm. This young man was handsome, clever, and ambitious, ready to climb up the social hierarchy. One day, his employer brought a pretty, young peasant girl to work as a milkmaid on the farm. The young farm manager and milkmaid were instantly attracted to each other, and a passionate romance ensued. The owner of the farm became aware of this budding romance, and he banished the milkmaid from the farm.
Rude.
This did not dim the couple's love for each other, though, and they continued to see each other. The farm manager's family did approve the match and married the young man to a woman that they thought was more suitable. I think that's
They didn't approve.
Like, the way it's written, and I think that's a typo. So the milkmaid's heart broke from grief. The milkmaid found out that she was begotten with child shortly afterwards, and rumors were spreading throughout the village. One morning, a newborn baby was found dead in the field, and the villagers' rumors turned malicious, and they accused the milkmaid of murder.
Oh, no.
Her former lover, the young manager, came to confess that he was the father, and largely through his testimony, she was found guilty and executed. After her death, things started to go awry for the young farm manager. The farm suddenly became unproductive, and everywhere where he stepped, he found a white hare flitting underneath his feet.
Good. Fuck that guy.
He soon found that each time the hare appeared, bad luck ensued. Trying as he might, he could not kill it. It just dissipated into thin air when the young man had it cornered. After a litany of failures, the farm manager was sacked from his job. He tried moving to a different region to put distance between him and the hare, but it followed him everywhere. And each time as he was about to succeed in a venture, the white hare appeared, bringing about calamity.
Good.
One morning, the man's horse was found wandering along a road, and there had been especially heavy snowfall, but soon his broken body was found nearby.
Oh, no.
And trailing around it were the paw prints of a hare.
That's what you get!
Right?
Jerk face.
So, I thought that was a pretty intense story, and I wanted to share that. So, the white hare was immortalized by a traditional folk ballad called The Creegan White Hare, where the rabbit is clever and eludes capture by the most skilled Irish hunters. There's a part of the ballad I want to read. So, in the lowland of Creegan, there lives a white hare, as swift as a swallow that flies through the air. You may tramp the world over, but none can compare with the pride of low Creegan, the bonny white hare. Just to be clear, white hares in Ireland are very, very rare. Most of the Irish hares are, in fact, brown in nature and get mistaken for the brown hare found in England. The difference is that the Irish hare has shorter ears, And there's, like, I think there's black tips on them.
Gonna see the bunnies.
Bunnies. Okay. So today, you can still visit Cregan and find at the town's visitor center honors to this famous animal, the white hare. Also in this region, the people work hard to protect their Irish hares. I found multiple articles stating that these hares are fading with the destruction of their habitats, and there in Cregan, they make a point to try and preserve such habitats for them. In actuality, I found many articles showing the Irish hare to be solitary and shy, and their habitats include grassy fields, woodlands, and mountainous regions.
Maybe I'm an Irish hare.
And, yeah, I had a feeling this. And that is the story of the Irish hare.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was like, at first I was like, wait, this is a Germanic goddess, what the fuck? The thing is a lot of it's not written. Tis not written! So I don't know what the real thing is.
Right.
Especially since I read a passage to you a few days ago from Bede, and you were like, that guy sounds really biased. That was the first words out of your mouth.
Yeah. We try to, like, if something sounds really biased, we try to find it on a different website or a different book
other
to
sources.
Prove that that's what was going on instead of just taking that person's word for it.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know what? I kept looking into it, and it was like, every single article I found, they're like, scholars really debate this. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to say this is actually what it was. Mm-hmm. This is what I found. But I don't know for sure, because a lot of the knowledge has been lost with
time and conquest and Christianity and all that jazz.
Yeah, and I was reading this thing, because I was reading up on the Ishtar deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying how there are plenty of Christians that will admit that these practices came from these pagan traditions, but that doesn't faze them, because the way they see religion is that it's ever evolving and it's just adapting to the changes of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that kind of interesting, because there's a lot that we do every year for these holidays that actually coincide with what used to be the pagan calendar and celebration,
mm-hmm.
or of a different culture's calendar and celebration, but now has been adopted by the Christian faith and practice.
Right. And then the thing with it being going back to a Germanic goddess, that's not really surprising, because there was a lot of back and forth of different peoples to
yes.
England and Ireland. And
yes. Speaking of, I'm really excited for Assassin's Creed to go to Ireland.
Right.
Because you've got these people from Norway going to Britain and then going to Ireland. So, like, you know that there was a route between all of these peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And they did trade with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it interesting. And, like, reading that whole thing about the hare being a taboo to eat, I was reading that the reason that the Irish hare was going extinct is because, like, one, yeah, their habitat's been going out, but also, like, the way that, like, people were started eating hares again.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know if that knowledge was, like, lost to the common people, or, like, they're just like, well, I don't care anymore. So it's like,
right. We are starving, so let's eat the bunnies.
Yeah. So that's it about the Irish hare. I might be doing one, I might be doing two pieces of art for this one.
Right, we'll see.
We'll see what happens. But it's more than likely going to be on Procreate, knowing myself.
Sounds good. Reminders, everybody, make sure to check out our art for this week's entities on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any art of your own of these beings, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout-out of a name or a handle, or if you'd like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos. You can message us on here as well.
Check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffeetablemythos. Or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffeetablemythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.